Today's episode of the Startup Slingshot is brought to you by Sunag Consulting. Sunag Consulting has been helping startups exceed their business goals through interactive initiatives, including website design, social media marketing, and mobile marketing strategies for over 5 years. You can find them online at sunagconsulting.com or by phone at 615-669-3269. Now on to the show.
My name is William Griggs, and this is the 23rd episode of the Startup Slingshot, a series that delivers guidance from experienced entrepreneurs and business experts on how to dream, launch, and grow your business. Today's guest is Joe Abraham. Joe started his first company at the age of 23 and has since served as a founder, executive, consultant, and advisor to both Fortune 500 companies and high net worth individuals. Today, we're going to talk with Joe about his book, Entrepreneurial DNA, including the programs and tools he has crafted to help individuals like you build and execute breakthrough strategies. Enjoy. All right, Joe, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me here.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about your background.
It's been entrepreneurship. Ever since I got out of college, I've been building businesses. Built companies in a bunch of different industries, either myself or in a co-founder role or in a key advisor role. Everything from, retail and motorsports to IT, healthcare, the whole gamut. And 2004, I sold my last company, took some time off, didn't know what I was going to do when I grew up, and ended up starting a little boutique startup incubator here in Chicago. Out of that, we launched 7 companies in about a 3-year window, all of which are in business today. Worked with a lot of amazing entrepreneurs through my journey. Interestingly enough, every company I've ever built has somehow served the entrepreneur. The entrepreneur has always been our customer, so to speak. So it was always solving the next problem, you know, that we found in the marketplace. And 2008 or so was when I had when I discovered entrepreneurial DNA and this whole bossy thing and set out to write the book. And then by 2010, the book was done. It hit bookstores in 2011. And along the way, we launched a technology company called Bossy and also kind of oversee a think tank now on entrepreneurship. So a lot of thought leaders in entrepreneurship and I kind of get together and we concoct new stuff and they present it at seminars and events around the country, around the world. So that's kind of me. My world is entrepreneurship and I call myself the entrepreneur's biggest fan.
Yeah, that's a good tagline. Can you tell us a little bit more about that incubator that you started there in Chicago?
Yeah, it was quite by accident, actually. I was kind of twiddling my thumbs. I didn't know what I was going to do next. And the phone started to ring. People I'd run into in previous companies saying, hey, Joe, I've got this idea for a business. And if you've got some time, you can help. And I said, sure, you know, while I'm figuring out what I'm going to do. And one entrepreneur turned into two, which turned into 5. And all we would really do is entrepreneur would come to me with their business idea. We'd sit down, hash it out, tear it apart. Write a business plan. We'd go raise some money together. I had a pretty good network of funding sources, or sometimes we'd just do a friends and family round, depending on the type of business they had. So we'd raise the money, and then I had a stable of experts that I had met over, you know, 15-year window of time. People I had paid out of my pocket to build everything from websites to social media strategy to raising money to running finance. And so I kind of like a general contractor. It was the equivalent of having a flooring guy and a lighting person and a drywall person. And I'd bring them in and we'd build a house together. And what that allowed us to do is build these very fast growing companies with very, very low budgets. Because my client, so to speak, or my portfolio company didn't have to hire a full-time CFO and a COO and a salesperson. Like, I had a rock star sales guy selling for 4 different companies. And that was part of the secret to our success, was you just had really high-end people doing some really amazing things. And I thought that was what I was going to do for the rest of my life. And it wasn't until the bossy discovery of entrepreneurial DNA that I kind of had to put that on the back burner and really focus on this.
Yeah, that's a really cool bit of experience to have. It sounds similar to, I don't know if you've done any research on it, with Idea Lab, which is an incubator out in California. Kind of have that, and they've been doing that for a while, where they have internal HR departments and marketing and graphic designers sharing the resources. Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about how Bossy came to be and what all y'all are doing.
Yeah, so Bossy is basically acronym for Builder, Opportunist, Specialist, and Innovator, the 4 entrepreneurial DNAs. So that was just, you know, let's come up with some names that describe these 4 different types of entrepreneurs, and that's what we ended up with. So that's what Bossy is. And while I was doing the research on the book, okay, so let me take a step back. This whole thing came about totally by accident. I wasn't sitting there going, oh, I should write a book or, you know, whatever it may be. I was literally working with entrepreneurs and getting more and more frustrated that one size wasn't fitting all. I was taking blueprinted strategy that had worked wonderfully well for me or for another entrepreneur, giving it to, you know, the next entrepreneur, and they were falling flat on their face. And it wasn't because they weren't as smart. It wasn't because, you know, they didn't have the background or the talent. Behaviorally, it became obvious that behaviorally we were wired differently, right? And I was trying to make round pegs fit in square holes. And so I started to look around going, okay, well, someone's probably written about this, or there's probably some coursework about this, so we can better educate ourselves to run the incubator better, and there was nothing. So that set me off on about a 2.5-year journey of interviewing thousands of entrepreneurs, everything from silly little Survey Monkey surveys, you know, all the way to going into people's businesses and just tearing it apart from top to bottom. And it became very obvious that there's four different types of entrepreneurs. And so we just named it Builder, Opportunist, Specialist, Innovator. But the really cool part was we found that these people fall in a quadrant. So there's opposites and complements, and it just kind of all fell in place. It wasn't something we conjured up. It was just waiting for someone to figure out, you know. And so we launched. So when I launched the company, originally the plan was it was going to be a technology-based initiative where entrepreneurs could come, take this assessment, and then our algorithms connect entrepreneurs with each other based on likes and compliments and all that. And we just thought we'll just build this really cool online community for entrepreneurs where they can connect with experts and get educated and all that kind of stuff. That's what we built. And we released the beta this summer. And then we turned it off because it became very obvious. And this happens a lot with technology companies. You pivot, right? So our pivot was to realize that rather than try and be a community of our own, there's plenty of other communities out there. Let's just take our tools and make it available to them. So everything from the American Express's community all the way down to some blogger who has, you know, a few hundred followers, our tools make those systems better. So our pivot was we're going to become kind of this digital analytics platform where our assessment and the tools that we provide behind it help our customer who's now not directly the entrepreneur but the people who serve the entrepreneur. So universities, incubators, you know, are suddenly people who can use our stuff and are using our stuff now.
Yeah, that's
and then cool. On the side, we've got this little think tank called Bossy Performance Institute where we're trying to solve the next round of problems. Like, what's the next thing? What's the next issue that entrepreneurs need help with? And sometimes an entrepreneur will come in and spend a day with us and we'll kind of tear their business apart, kind of like we did in the incubator days. But that's less and less. And so that's us in a nutshell.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Let's dig into your book, Entrepreneurial DNA. Let's first talk about some of the things maybe the viewers can expect when they pick up a copy.
Yeah, well, the first thing they'll realize is that this is a very conversational book. This is not some author who's written 50 books or has like a whole system of how you author. This is just me having a conversation with the entrepreneur. And it's telling a lot of my story, telling stories of a lot of entrepreneurs I dealt with and worked with. And in some of that storytelling, I think every single reader will find themselves in there. They'll say, oh, that's more like me and that's not like me. And in the book, you take the assessment. You take part of the assessment in the book, but I really recommend people come and take the online version, which is free because it's a little bit longer and you get better results. But then based on your results, there's a section of the book that's built for you. So if you're builder DNA, there's a section for builder DNA. If you're opportunist DNA, there's a section for opportunist DNA where you learn about that behavioral type. And then the next section of the book says, okay, well, here's some strategies that are specifically designed for you. And then in the final section of the book, it's a strategic planning process to say, okay, if you understand that you're different and you recognize that there may be some areas of your business where you're doing things you shouldn't be doing, well, how do you go about retooling the business? So it's a set of exercises you go through with your partners or with your staff to basically retool your strategy to be better optimized for your entrepreneurial DNA.
Gotcha. So you talked about you created the study. You found out all this information. You felt like you kind of discovered it. You didn't create it. And then you talk about a little bit about just now about how knowing what your entrepreneurial DNA and how that can affect your business. Can you talk a little bit more about why people should, let's say, purchase the book, take the test, find you online to really, like, what's the impact?
Yeah, the impact is this. I call it a game changer. I know that word's being used a lot, but here's why it's a game changer. Because so many entrepreneurs, me included, are following a one-size-fits-all approach. It's like we walk up to a buffet of business strategy every day, and here's author number one, and seminar number two, and guru number three, and blogger number four. And we're kind of, it's like walking up to a buffet going, I'll try a little Indian, I'll try a little Chinese, I'll try a little American, I'll try some dessert. And you pile up all this food, and it tastes great. But about 2:30 in the afternoon, you know, you feel slow and lethargic, and you want to take a really long nap. And that's how a lot of businesses feel today. It's because we've got all these conflicting strategies that in and of themselves are great. But in many cases, you start putting them together or you put them with the wrong entrepreneur and it just doesn't work. And you and I, the entrepreneurs, the ones shelling out $500 for this, $2,000 for that, $8,000 for this consultant, $10,000 for this website. And hey, there's, you can't afford that, right? Especially not in this day and age. So the game changer for in this is to say, for someone to recognize, who am I? And then based on who I am, what are some strategies that are proven to work for people like me? Rather than looking over the fence going, oh my gosh, look at what Sue did. She knocked it out of the park with a certain social media strategy or with a certain Facebook fan strategy. Maybe I'll copy that. Well, maybe, and maybe it'll work for you. But if you're not like her, it's not going to work for you, no matter how hard you try. So the two main areas that Bossy focuses on is your plan. In other words, your strategic plan of where you're going and how you're going to get there. How do you tweak that? And then your people. People is a huge part of this. Is do you have the right people on the bus, and are they sitting in the right seats on the bus? And when you really start to look at it through the lens of entrepreneurial DNA, most entrepreneurs, especially family-owned businesses and small businesses, find, ooh, I've got the wrong people, or they're sitting in the wrong spots on the bus.
Gotcha. That's really interesting. It seems like one of the guys I recently interviewed was talking about time. So it seems like when you're following someone else's plan, you're not really optimizing the use of your time. You might find yourself down the road struggling or just getting by, or like several people say, in the land of the living dead, where you're just, you know, eking by.
You're right. I go so far as to make the claim in the book that the number one reason for the high failure and frustration rate in entrepreneurship is this one size fits all that's being taught in schools, it's being taught in workshops and seminars and by gurus. That's what's frustrating entrepreneurs, because they think they have to do it all and they don't need to.
And it's also, it seems like a lot of entrepreneurs you talk to, they have a little bit of envy and they say, hey, I see that guy doing it. I can do it. I'm smarter than that guy. So they take what that guy did. Duplicate it. That makes a lot of sense.
That's right.
And then you talked about, you know, the process of really finding out who you are and what you should do, and then the people you should surround yourself with. Can we do an overview of kind of the four types of DNA?
Yeah, that'd be fun. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, let's talk about builders.
Okay, builder DNA. They represent about 10 to 15% of the overall ecosystem of entrepreneurs. So this is one of the smallest groups of entrepreneurs. These tend to be serial entrepreneurs who build very highly scalable businesses. Typically, when you look at a builder, you know you're dealing with a builder DNA entrepreneur when they start a business and within 2 to 3 years, it hits 5 million and scales past 5 million to 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 million. It's almost, you can watch their trajectory of growth, and it's very much of that hockey stick type growth pattern. They because they're built behaviorally to create highly scalable systems. And they tend to be controlling in nature, very driven. So some people have a secondary builder DNA. So as viewers are watching this, they may say, well, I'm kind of controlling and driven. Well, it may be your secondary. If it's your primary DNA, you'll know it by the size of your company. I mean, you'll typically have a minimum of 20 employees, in most cases 50, 100, 300 employees, because a lot of builder DNA entrepreneurs tend to measure success by the size of their infrastructure. They don't really measure success with income, because they typically blow by any income goals very, very quickly. They have a lot of great strengths, the ability to build these highly scalable businesses that generate millions, if not billions of dollars in revenue, and they've got weaknesses. Their main weakness tends to be in the area of human capital, people. They burn through people, they burn through relationships, they tend to be very lonely individuals, and you know, when you really get behind the scenes of who these people are, it's kind of eye-opening. And so a lot of young entrepreneurs, budding entrepreneurs, will say, I want to be that person. I want to build the million-billion-dollar company. Well, when you really peel back the layers of the onion, the cost to get there is sometimes higher than most people are willing to pay. And it's usually in relational cost.
Gotcha. Can you give us one example of somebody we might know that fits this bill?
Yeah, I mean, a good example would be a Trump-like person. And if you look at Trump in the boardroom scene of The Apprentice, I know a lot of that's made up, but that's the classic builder DNA. Driven my way or the highway, but the capacity to build, one day build, create buildings, next day TV show, next day whatever else, and build them into scalable large brands.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Let's skip over to opportunist.
Yeah, so opportunist makes up about 30% of our entrepreneurial ecosystem. These are people who are driven for the ground floor opportunity. It's almost like a beagle has a scent for hunting. Opportunists have a nose for the next great money-making thing. So their desire, they're wired to want to get rich as fast as possible. And so they're drawn to opportunities, franchising, multi-level marketing, flipping real estate. areas where there's an opportunity to come in, work really, really hard for a window of time, and then pull the plug, sit back and collect a very comfortable income, sit on a beach, sip a Mai Tai, you know, type. They tend to be the promoters of our world. It's almost a requirement. If you're in professional sales or commission sales, opportunist DNA is going to be your number one DNA, your primary. These people tend to be very optimistic. You could lose $100,000 on a deal tonight, wake up tomorrow morning, dust it off and go, okay, I know that was the deal I thought was going to be the great one, but today's deal is really the great one. They tend to be very impulsive by nature. But and this group measures success not by infrastructure or stuff. They tend to be solo a lot of times. They measure success by mailbox money. In other words, it's not so much how much did I make today, but based on the efforts I'm putting forward when I sell this thing or when I, you know, exit this thing, how much money will I be making when I'm not having to work anymore?
Gotcha.
So a lot of great strengths. Number one weakness in this group is focus. The tendency to want to juggle multiple streams of income. And somehow, some way, they convince themselves, and I unconvince them in the book, but they convince themselves that multiple streams of income is a good thing. And I found, and I talked to thousands of opportunist DNA individuals, that is the kiss of death. Someone lies to them. Internet marketers, information marketers lie to them to say you need multiple streams of income and, you know, have six things going at the same time, and it's an absolute lie.
Does that come into play where the whole saying or the phrase of less wood behind the arrow? Where you have too much going on.
Yeah, because this is a highly talented group that loves promoting, but when they engage in multiple streams of income too soon, they find themselves distracted and the focus can't go into any one thing. They have a lot of fun doing it, but it's always two steps forward, three steps back, two steps forward, three steps back. Right? A great example of opportunist DNA is Sir Richard Branson. So, you know, his last book was Screw It, Let's Do It. It's kind of this... You know, risk is not an issue. Let's just have some fun. Let's do it. But he's a great example of someone who used the strengths of his DNA to build a huge global set of brands. But he also offset weaknesses by surrounding himself by the right people who keep him from just flying off the hook. And so that he's a great example of what opportunist DNA is capable of.
Right. Yeah. Someone that, like you're saying, can do a variety of things and be successful.
One day we're building a record label and, fly to the outer space. Sure. It cost $1 billion. No problem. We probably lose it all. That's fine. Let's just go have some fun. That's opportunist DNA.
And then we start a cell phone carrier.
Yeah, exactly. And then an airline. Why not? You know? Absolutely.
Yeah, for fun. Like you're saying. What about specialists?
Specialist DNA is the most dominant DNA in all of entrepreneurship. It makes up well over 45% of all entrepreneurs. These are the experts of our world. They go through years and years of schooling, apprenticeship, or on-the-job training and develop a skill in legal or accounting or medical or, you know, programming or graphic design, you name it. And they come to market to say, hey, I'm going to make that skill available to the marketplace. They are the experts of our world. They usually make a good living because they are credible, because they've built expertise. And what they'll do is they'll go into their industry, let's use legal for example, and they'll stay in that industry for 10, 20, 30, 40 years and then sell that business and, you know, ride off into the sunset. Unlike the opportunist DNA, who's their opposite, on the quadrant you'll see S's and O are opposites, opportunist DNA can't stay in the same industry longer than 6 weeks. I mean, they're off to the next thing and like frog hopping lily pads on a pond, right? But the interesting thing about when we studied specialist DNA is they are the methodical experts. They tend to be very client service focused. It's all about client service. They tend to be fairly analytical and risk averse relative to some of the other entrepreneurs. They measure success by personal income. So when I would sit down with a specialist DNA entrepreneur and say, how do you know you're doing well? Like, how do you measure success? And it's typically the adjusted gross income on their 1040. You know, if that's a healthy six-figure number, they've had a good year. And so a lot of great gifts. These are the people who you and I call on and say, hey, I've got an itch back here. Or can you answer this question about my taxes? Or, you know, because we all respect them. They're well respected in their field of trade. And their main frustration, their main weakness is in the area of marketing, business development. It's an uphill battle because standing out in a very crowded marketplace of competitors is something that almost every specialist DNA entrepreneur has to deal with.
Yeah, that's interesting. So we said accountants, we said lawyers. Any other examples?
Yeah, a lot of retail shop owners, dentists, chiropractors. It just goes on and on. Programmers, graphic designers, copywriters, you know, people who've built a skill and are basically looking to either market that skill or product that or set of products around that skill.
That makes a lot of sense. There's definitely a lot of those people. So you're saying competition is heavy and then business development is a weakness. That's something you need to focus on.
Because how do I stand out in that crowded marketplace? You look at guru.com, elance.com, it's full of people with specialist DNA.
Yeah, that's really
the yellow pages. Yeah, this yellow pages is full of people with specialist DNA.
Gotcha. And let's hop over to innovator.
Yeah, so innovator DNA make up about the remaining 15% of entrepreneurs. These are, let's call them our mad scientists. These are kind of the Einsteins of our world. They tend to be very mission driven. So when I was studying this group of entrepreneurs and I said, hey, like, why did you even go into business? Like, what was your reason for starting a business? They'll usually say something along the lines of, I really didn't plan to start a business. I was just kind of doing something I loved and a business just popped up around me. I was just mixing up grandma's favorite cookie recipe and like people are breaking down the doors for the cookie and now Walmart wants it, you know, and I was just making up a nutritional supplement to help my daughter or, you know, I was just whatever. I was just writing some code just to have some fun and whammo, Napster was born type thing, you know. So innovator DNA is the type of entrepreneur who really wants to change the world with what they've discovered or what they've come up with. They tend to have breakthrough intellectual property. A lot of people would say they're kind of the geniuses of our world as it relates to the things that they do. They measure success very differently, by the way. They don't really care about income as much. Yeah, they need food on the table, but very opposite to the builder DNA who builds these highly scalable big brands and they can go into any industry and do it. Innovator DNA is very limited to the one area of expertise they have. And so they measure success by impact. How many lives were changed by my product or service? And they're very kind of mission driven. So for some entrepreneurs watching this, they'll say, well, I'm kind of mission driven. And I really care about that. Well, that may be your secondary DNA. If you've got breakthrough intellectual property that's patentable or proprietary in some way where people are willing to pay you four or five times what may appear to be a competitor would be, then you've got, that's your primary innovator DNA. So Steve Jobs is an example of someone who had a high amount of innovator DNA. A lot of great strengths. The big weakness for this group is actually running a business. They're horrible business operators. And it's just how they are because they would much rather be in the lab of their business tinkering and building the next great thing than dealing with finance and legal and accounting and sales and marketing. Many cases, iDNA entrepreneurs will say, I just want someone to do it for me. And, you know, so back in my incubator days, many of the companies we launched were these iDNA entrepreneurs. I didn't even know it. It's not because we didn't have the system back then. It just happened to be people who said, Joe, I'll trust you with the company. I'll just go do what I do best. And that's why the partnership worked out so well.
Gotcha. So that's a great overview. And it seems like you're saying, every one of these different types of DNA can look in the book and find some strategies. Let's do a run through. Putting myself on the spot, putting yourself on the spot. I did a test. I took the test online.
Yeah.
And I scored out as a specialist opportunist.
Good.
So for all the viewers out there, we're going to go through what that actually means and what I can do to improve myself as a kind of an example to see they take the test and see what they can find in the book that'll help them.
So that here's what's interesting. Specialist opportunist, SO, it's a cross quadrant combination. And it makes up well over, I'd say almost 70% of all entrepreneurs. So you're in a very popular group. So here's the good thing about S&O. Being a specialist opportunist means that because you're cross-quadrant, the strengths of one DNA are the weaknesses of the other and vice versa. So it's kind of yin-yang. So if you learn how to understand, once you start to really dig into what the strengths are of your DNA and the weaknesses are, you'll find how to offset them by weaknesses and strengths on the other side. I'll give you a couple of examples. It's kind of like being the tortoise and the hare all at the same time because there's the analytical risk-averse side of the specialist is the complete opposite of the fly by the seat of your pants, you know, risk taker and the O. So this is why SO entrepreneurs will very often find themselves conflicted when making decisions. An opportunity comes their way and they'll look back and go, why in the world did I say yes to that? Why did I do that? And you look back and that was your O DNA going, let's do it. We could, you know, this could be the deal of the century. Let's jump on it. But then in other cases, you'll look and go, why did we pass that up? Why did I say no? Why did I analyze that thing to death? That's the specialist DNA. So really entrepreneurial DNA is a filter. At the end of the day, when someone reads the book or goes through some of our stuff, all you're doing is installing a filter in your mind that says, how do I process decisions, opportunity, risk, human capital decisions through a filter that says, is this good for me? Or is this going to highlight a strength or is this going to highlight a weakness of my DNA? So as it relates to SO entrepreneurs, the way it works is I always encourage people, focus on your primary DNA. So the insight I give you is focused on your primary. And then, oh, by the way, here's some things to consider if your secondary is O. You know, that's kind of how I present it to you. So as an S DNA entrepreneur, the number one thing I want to encourage you to do is look at your strategic plan. And not strategic plan in the generic sense of the term, but really, where are you going to go over the next 3 years and how are you going to get there? And to really look at that through the lens to say, am I doing the same old that all my competitors and all the other SDNA entrepreneurs are doing? And in most cases, the answer is yes. I'm following industry best practices. I went and studied, you know, successful people in my industry, listened to some seminar material, and that's what I'm following. And so the encouragement is, let's find something breakthrough in your strategic plan that allows you to kind of stand out in that crowded marketplace and really kind of that personal branding side of things, right? That's a pretty hot topic nowadays. But how do we make you stand out in a crowded marketplace? That's number one. Number two, in the book, there's I think I put it in the it's in your in the specialist section, but then there's also an appendix area called SPACE. SPACE is basically acronym for suspects, prospects, accounts, clients, and evangelists. I didn't come up with this. I borrowed it from somebody else, and I give them full credit for it. But it to me, it's one of the simplest ways to present a marketing plan. And so for SDNA, the big thing is look at your marketing plan through SPACE. Who are my suspects? How do I move them from suspect to prospect, prospect to account to client, client to evangelist? The challenge with SDNA entrepreneurs a lot is they find it very hard to define who their suspect is. And so when I say, who's the person and situation for which your company is always the best choice? A lawyer will say business owners, right? A dentist will say families. It's so generic and so broad and so big, it's almost impossible unless you've got Microsoft's advertising budget to target business owners. It's impossible. You can't do it. You could do it 10 years ago, but in today's day and age, you just can't do it. So my whole thing is let's really define the person and situation for which your company is always.
All right, back to space.
All right, so what we... Okay, so when it comes to defining your target audience, like that law firm, they said, well, we've got business owners. And then we'd say, well, business owners is too broad. How do we narrow it down? What type of business owner? Well, entrepreneurs in the startup. Stage, we tend to really do well with. We enjoy that energy. Oh, good. Okay. Then more and more questions later, it became evident that, well, of all the services you can offer them, which one do you hit out of the park every single time? You love doing it. They love you for it. If you're the best at it, no one can compete. And it ended up being, well, private placements, helping them raise money. Great. That's your suspect, a startup technology company that needs to do their private placement. And that had a transforming effect on them as specialists competing against 100 other law firms in Chicago, thousands of other law firms, because they could really target their message, they could focus it. And then it has huge implications on your social media strategy and your online marketing strategy when you can refine your target audience down to that amount, right? So that's just suspects. And once you've identified them, what are the systems you're gonna put in place to move someone from suspect, just who may be interested, to a prospect, someone who raises their hand and said, I'm willing to talk to you now. And that's the marketing game. And then how do you move them from prospect to account where they buy and, you know, take money out of their wallet to spend with you? So with Specialist DNA, that's the focus. How do we really focus on your marketing plan and build a breakthrough strategic plan and a marketing plan around who you are rather than, oh, I heard such and such social media guru say I needed to have a Facebook fan page, you know, and a Twitter feed. I found that a majority of Specialist DNA entrepreneurs shouldn't even be involved in social media. So there's this other BS lie out there that says everyone should be in social media. You know what? Behaviorally, if you're not a social person, you're wasting your time in social media. You're wasting your money. And some jackass gurus telling you that you got to spend the money, that's ridiculous. You know, so it's those types of things. It's marketing strategy. The other one is looking at your people. Who do you surround yourself with? Specialist DNA entrepreneurs tend to be drawn to other specialist DNA entrepreneurs. The doctors like to hang out with the lawyers, the consultants like to hang out with, you know, the experts. And that's great in one sense because you can share leads. There's, you know, there's a whole marketing play around the referral business and networking, and that's a huge part of specialist DNA. But to recognize that some of the complementary DNAs like O's are a very important part of your social network. They're a very important part of your mastermind group. So if you're meeting once a week or once a month with a group of entrepreneurs, make sure you've got some O DNA. They'll drive you nuts. You'll think they're absolute lunatics, right? But you need them to balance you out because they'll draw you out of your shell and make sure you're thinking outside the box, you don't kind of close in with the typical S. So it's who you surround yourself with in your business and who you surround yourself with outside your business. Vendor selection, you know, SDNA entrepreneurs tend to hire SDNA service providers, which is good in some cases. If you're having someone fix your computer, that's great. But when you're having someone create your marketing plan, not so great to have an S create your marketing plan if you're an S. You know, you want an I or a B to create your marketing plan. So that's the type of insight I try and give in the book is how do you read people, or using Brassi profiling, how do you profile people and then figure out where they fit best in your business and life?
Gotcha. And so if you're reading the book and you get the introduction and you take the test and you come back to the book and you have two letters, you're first starting off with your main or your first letter that you score. Then you're going through the section of the book that tells you how to optimize your business for being, let's say, a specialist. And then you do the same thing for the second letter?
Actually, good question. The way it works is exactly like you said, right? Except that at the end, once you've studied the S and the seven strategies for the S, in that same section is now, if you happen to have a B secondary or an O secondary or an I secondary, there's a little extra for you there. So you read all about the S, and then there's this little section that says, now, if you happen to be an SO, here's some additional insight and how the O part can really be a benefit or a detriment and what you can do about it. So that's where I'd say, okay, so if you're an SO, if you've got a lot of O as your secondary, then watch out for this, this, and this. And if you've got just a very little O, then, you know, use it this way.
Gotcha. Do you have any of those off the top of your head so we can give an example?
If you've got low opportunist DNA, and I know in the basic assessment that we offer, we don't give you percentages. We've got an advanced one that asks you more questions and we give you percentages. But if you find that O is just a minor DNA or a, you know, secondary DNA, but not so much, then what I encourage people to do is just watch out for when you go on these distracting projects, right? So when you've got a little bit of O DNA, the tendency is within your core business, you'll come up with all these crazy ideas that kind of get you on these tangents. And how do you watch for those and put the system in place to say, oh, that's the O in me taking me off course. How do I bring myself back? And then on a positive side, how do I leverage the O to do more business development, to get out there more and put myself out there more, right? But if you've got high O, my big recommendation is don't let that O loose in your own business. Find something else on the side. Because the O DNA is like a muscle, right? It has to be stretched. And if you keep it confined to your business, it'll turn the whole thing upside down. But if you can have a part-time business on the side or some joint venture with somebody or something fun you do, you know, to make some extra money on the side, it keeps the O muscle flexed outside of your core business so it doesn't interfere. I know a lot of entrepreneurs who have SDNA and high O who basically did so many crazy things in their business, it just totally trashed their core business. And so that's the difference between low and high. How do you leverage it? You know, because the O in you is the part that goes out and takes the risks and does the selling and does the marketing and the promoting side. The S doesn't want to do any of that. But when left unfettered, it can really take us in 100 different weird directions.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So if you're saying that the O is like a muscle that you have inside you, if you keep it in your business, you're going to make yourself go a bunch of different directions. But if you have some outside projects, you can use that muscle to help come up with creative ideas for those other people or other clients or other businesses.
Yeah, so like let's use you for an example, right? I don't know much about you other than the little time we've had a chance to talk and just kind of looking at your site. So doing what you're doing now with me isn't what pays your bills. This is something you're doing. You came up with a creative idea. It adds a lot of value to the marketplace. It builds your primary business. That's the O in you that came up with something breakthrough and took a big risk. And, you know, you're reaching out to publishers and all that. That's the O in you. The S in you runs a core business that benefits from what you're doing here. Correct. On the outside. Now, had you not done what you're doing now, and all that O energy that came up with all this great stuff was trying to do your core business, it'd be pretty nuts.
Yeah, it's funny to all the viewers out there. As you're sitting and explaining specialists and opportunists, I'm just like, got me picked. You got me nailed. This is me. This is me. That's my weakness. That's my strength. That's exactly why I have other side projects. I didn't really think of it like that, other than like so many ideas. Gotta use them somewhere. Gotta implement, which is, I guess, the opportunities coming in or coming out of me. And then all of it aligns with digital media, digital marketing technology, which is where the specialist in me is.
That's the part of, yeah. So, yeah, so it is good to go back and read the O section, but not with a different set of lenses, saying, hey, there's a little bit of me in here. What are some of the strengths? What are some of the weaknesses? How can I leverage them? But really focusing on the S side and really building that digital marketing specialist brand to a point where it blows by everybody else who's claiming to be a digital marketing
expert. Gotcha. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It seems like for most of our viewers out there, it is, if they're young entrepreneurs or first-time entrepreneurs, it is often following the blueprint or the other expert or the how the incubator sets it up or the accelerator sets it up or how your mentor has done it. It seems like this might be their first step to really getting off on the right foot of finding what type of business really suits them and how they can surround themselves with a team that normally would be an abstract thought of being like, okay, well, I think I'm good at this. Maybe I should find this.
Yeah,
this actually puts it on paper.
My college roommate and I came up with a great idea and we're going to be business partners. Okay, that's fine. But let's understand each other's DNAs and find out where each of us should sit on the bus, which one of us should drive and which one of us should pump the gas.
Yeah, it just seems like a lot of people push the Strength Finders book and Strength Finders 2.0, and that has its place. But it seems like for entrepreneurs, this is kind of the go-to guide to understand yourself.
Yeah, that's well said. This is measuring your entrepreneurial behavior and your entrepreneurial tendencies and gives you insight on what to do about it in your entrepreneurial career. We're finding that corporations are getting really excited about this because there's an application of corporate entrepreneurship and innovation in companies. And so who knows where this is going to go, but my passion is for the entrepreneur, the business owner, the person getting ready to start that next great company.
Yeah, this has been great. I've learned a lot and I really appreciate your time. Have I missed anything? Is there anything our viewers need to know about this topic, about this book, about you? Kind of an open question.
I mean, obviously, to hang out with me, joeabraham.com is my blog. I don't blog a lot. I should do a lot more, but you can kind of just connect with me there and read some of the stuff I write about and I rant about. Definitely, I'd encourage everyone to take the assessment. It's free. And when they come to Bossy DNA, which is BOSIDNA.com, they'll see four different assessments. So you just got to pick the one that's right for you, whether you're a solopreneur or soon-to-be entrepreneur or corporate entrepreneur. It's pretty much asking the same questions, just phrased differently to fit your environment a little bit better. And then you get your results. And then, we're getting ready to introduce some cool little tools where you can visualize your peers and friends on and where they stack up to you and some other stuff that we'll be releasing a little later this month. So some fun tools to use that as a learning experience in your
entrepreneur. Yeah.
I'd love for some people to pick up the book and give feedback. Write a review on Amazon if you can. That's always appreciated.
Great. Yeah, I'll put the links in the show notes below the video when we post this thing. And to all our viewers out there, you can find this and additional episodes of the Startup Slingshot as well as other educational series at thestartupslingshot.com. Joe, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.